It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, we're getting ready to open the next road trip, our next series on this road trip between the Guardians and the Houston Astros. Sitting here going through some numbers. If there was ever a time over this this championship window for the Astros, for Cleveland to sort of take advantage of where this Houston team is, this is it. This is when you want to get the Astros while they're at their weakest. Nine wins. They're definitely not performing up to the level of past expectations. As they open this series, what do you see and expect and hope out of the Guardians this week against Houston?
Yeah, Joe, they're coming off, kind of an interesting weekend in Atlanta where they went 1-2, but had a chance to really win the series. But lost that extra inning game on Sunday, 4-3. And now they come into Houston, a place where they have not played especially well over the years in the postseason or the regular season. And they find the Astros at 9-19, really struggling. This is a team that's gone to the postseason 8 of the last 9 years. That's a regular entry into the World Series. But they have been beat up by injuries, especially on their pitching staff. And they look vulnerable right now.
Yeah, if any team can sort of commiserate with Houston and sort of feel their pain about injuries on their pitching staff, it's certainly Cleveland. But the Guardians have found a way to sort of overcome and work around any of their deficiencies in the starting rotation and in the bullpen, and sort of as the old Terry Francona turn of phrase, make their weaknesses into their strengths, and they've sort of come out. Firing with one of the best records in baseball. Two teams sort of seem to be moving in different directions. You've got Carlos Carrasco going tonight in the series opener for Cleveland, and he's facing Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown 0-4 with a 9.68 ERA. The pitcher schedule for Houston in the third game of the series, Spencer Arrighetti is 0-3 with a 10.97 ERA. In the middle is Justin Verlander, and tomorrow we'll get into all the specifics about Justin Verlander versus the Guardians and maybe an opportunity to sort of land some payback there. But, at least in two of the three of games in the series, it looks like the Guardians are going to maybe have some opportunities to put some runs on the board.
Yeah, with Brown and Arrighetti, they've had the plug holes in Houston's rotation because of their injuries. Houston is, they just got Verlander and Framber Valdez back, but they still have Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, and on and on and on the IL. So, that's really set their rotation back. But they're coming off a two-game sweep of the Rockies in Mexico over the weekend. So, they're starting to hit their stride, but, this is a chance for Cleveland, to save this road trip and, to keep up, keep that momentum going that they've established over the first 28 games of the season.
Well, I'm giving you a 10 out of 10 from the Russian judge on the pronunciation there of Jose Urquidy's name. Way to go, Hoynesy. I was sweating that one, but you nailed it. I agree. The two-game sweep in Mexico against Colorado, that's a little different. Both teams have to travel and all the different things with the ballpark and whatever, but again, you don't want to see that become the spark that, you know, ignites them to a three game sweep or anything against the Guardians. You were able to have a conversation the reporters were able to sit down with Carl Willis and just talk about the Guardians rotation and where it is right now and, you know, where he thinks things are trending. What did Carl Willis really have to say about what to expect from these guys? Because really this group is and we'll get into this in a bit, but this group is who they've got for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, Joe. Shane Bieber isn't coming off the IL. I mean, and even if he is, it'll be next year and he might be with another team. Who knows? So the five guys they've got are the five guys you're going to have to go with. They're going to have to go with Logan Allen and Tristan McKenzie and Tanner Bibee and Carlos Carrasco and Ben Lively. So, I mean, Carl was talking about these guys, you know, talking about how they can get into the get deeper into games. And he said it all comes down to attacking the strike zone, to cutting down on their walks, to believing in themselves, to become the best versions of themselves. He said he doesn't want them to try to replace Bieber, or Gavin Williams. He just wants them to be the best versions of themselves. You know, Carl is he believes in this rotation. He thinks they can get deeper into games, and we'll see if he's right, Joe. But the big thing is, you know, in talking to Carl Willis, in talking to manager Stephen Vogt, and talking to the catchers, you know, is they need the starters to attack the strike zone. You know, not be afraid to have the opposition put the ball in play.
Yeah, and that efficiency, you sort of saw a little bit of that, a flash of that with Tanner Bibee on Saturday night against Atlanta. And, you don't have to strike everybody out. You can let them put the ball in play. And maybe if you do get a walk or a base hit, you're only one pitch away from turning a double play with this infield. So, it's interesting to hear Carl Willis. I'm sure that conversation went on a lot more than the synopsis that you just gave there. Carl Willis is quite a talker, but as far as that, you know, the rotation piece getting deeper into games, I'm assuming as the weather warms up, as these guys get settled in, as they feel, you know, a little bit more built up and stretched out, that, you know, we're going to see them maybe go past 100 pitches, maybe once or twice. Who knows? I think everybody on that, staff, with the exception of maybe Tristan McKenzie, shouldn't be limited in terms of their pitch count. I can certainly see Ben Lively being a guy who logs a lot of innings just from his physical makeup as well. So we'll see how that goes. What did Carl have to say about the bullpen and where they are? Did he have anything to say about Hunter Gaddis and his performance over the weekend?
Yeah, we talked to him before Sunday. So, Hunter had the tough outing on Saturday. I didn't get a chance to talk to him after Sunday's game. But, you know, he was really positive about Hunter. He said he's really taken to the transformation from starter to reliever. You know, he says he's a big, strong guy. He has the mindset now that, all right, I don't have to, pace myself. I don't have to, work through, trying to figure out, try to figure out how to get through the lineup three or four times. You know, I can go with my best stuff against three guys, six guys, how many outs he needs. And, you know, I'm not going to face these guys a second time. And so here's my best stuff. Deal with it. And, I think that's what everybody likes about how Gaddis has pitched. Now, obviously, he stubbed his toe here, Saturday and Sunday against the Braves. And it's really going to, you know, I'm really interested to see how the how he performs in the next couple outings to see if he can, you know, if he's if he, you know, he has a mentality of a reliever when he's ahead, when he's attacking. But now you have to have that mentality also to have the short memory.
Yeah, to be able to pick yourself up and get back on the horse, so to say. It'll be also interesting to see how Stephen Vogt deploys him in this series, particularly. Is he going to put him in, you know, at the first opportunity in a leverage situation? Is he going to try and protect him maybe a little bit, give him an easy, you know, sort of if they've got a lead and he can go out there and give them an anything, who knows? How he's going to deploy him there, because confidence is a big part of what Gattis is doing. And he's, and make no mistake, he's one of the reasons why they have the record that they have right now. And, you know, he's also a guy that they're going to be relying on tremendously throughout the rest of the season, because Trevor Stephan is, again, not coming through that door anytime soon. It's all going to be on Gattis, you know, for the near future, at least moving forward. Wanted to, you know, we talked about how, you know, the guys who were there in the starting rotation are the guys who, you know, they've got to go with. Obviously, Xavion Curry in his one outing of the season so far in Boston was spectacular. He sort of drew the short straw and had to go down because he had options. Ben Lively's done a tremendous job in his place in the rotation. So unless there's an injury or somebody just really sort of falls off the cliff, you've only got maybe one move that you can make there. If this team, let me put it to you this way, if this team is, you know, is playing 600 ball for the next 2 months and is looking like they've looked over, you know, the course of the month of April, does the front office start maybe looking into trying to acquire a starting pitcher to add a little bit more depth in some way? And a bigger question, is there even a possibility of anybody being out there, because starting pitching is at such a premium right now in the league?
Yeah, it's tough to get starting pitching, Joe. You know, that's why they've spent so much time and money and effort to develop their own starting pitching. But, you know, this organization, this front office, if this team is close, if this team is contention, if they believe they have a chance to not only make this postseason but go deep into it, we've seen them make moves before to help to bolster that club. But starting pitching, when was the last time they added a starting pitcher, you know, going down the stretch? I can't remember.
More than a decade. It has to have been more than a decade. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't
remember. There was a guy, in 95, who was the guy they got from St. Louis? There was a starting pitcher. Ken Hill. Yeah. I mean, that's going back in the way back machine for that name. But I can't remember. I remember him trading, Dave Burba, trading Sean Casey for Dave Burba, right before the start of one of those seasons. I'm not sure, the late 90s, but I can't remember, you know, them bringing in, you know, a legitimate, you know, big league ready starter.
Doing a reverse CC Sabathia, you know, instead of trading your starting pitching at the trade deadline, trading for a CC, you know, being on the Milwaukee side of that kind of thing. It's been forever since they've done something like that. And again, we might come down to the point where if they're desperate, they have to make a move, and teams, there's not a lot of arms available out there that you would even want to maybe make a trade for, just with the state of pitching right now throughout the league because of, you know, all the injuries and just the quality of it. So, and whoever they have in the pipeline coming up, beyond maybe Curry, is still, you know, several years away. Tugboat Wilkinson isn't ready, even though he's striking out, you know, 41 guys in four starts. He's still a few years away at least.
Player of the Week, Tugboat.
Hell, with the nickname like that, he's Player of the Month in my book. I get him up here. What are we waiting for? He's the I can't get over just the image of him looking so much like a young CC, the hefty lefty, young CC Sabathia up there on the mound, just chucking it. It's great. Want to let our listeners know, if you're interested in prospects, if you're interested in the pitching situation, any updates that we have will be coming through subtext immediately to our subtext subscribers. You can log on to cleveland.com/subtext or send a text message to 216-208-4346. It's $3.99 a month to sign up, but you get to text back and forth directly with me and with Hoynsey throughout the season and get updates right after we talk to Stephen Vogt or Chris Antonetti or anybody in the front office. One of our favorite subjects to talk about and one of our favorite guys to talk about is Kyle Manzardo, the next big prospect for the Guardians. Lighting it up down in Columbus right now. So we'll call this Kyle Manzardo Corner. The latest on Manzardo and what he's up to. Hoynsey, we've already talked about where he might fit in this lineup, in this bench situation right now, if he were to come up. Just how much pressure is there on this organization right now to maybe explore what he's capable of?
Well, I don't think there's a lot of pressure right now, Joe, just because the offense is performing well. They're getting production out of the DH and the first base positions. But, if Manzardo keeps hitting like he's hitting right now, he's hitting 345, 10 for 29 with 5 home runs and 10 RBIs over his last 8 games. I mean, if he keeps knocking on the door, eventually they're going to have to open it and they're going to have to make some room for him, because this is a guy that, is showing he's ready. I mean, that is proving he's ready. It kind of reminds me of the Lindor situation where they waited and waited, and finally they ran out of excuses and they had to bring him up. So we'll see how this works out.
A little bit further down the line, Chase DeLauder, I know you said he's missed a few dates for Akron over the last week or so. But he's expected to be back in the lineup soon?
Yeah, I expect to be back in the lineup tonight. Chase DeLauder, had that great spring, the unexpected spring with the big league club. He's been out with an injury. Now, I don't have the specifics of the injury, just that he's battling some soreness. I was not told what body type or what body part the soreness is in, but he's been out for about the last 3 or 4 games. But he's expected back. He is not as doing as well as Manzardo. He's hitting 197, 1 home run, 3 RBIs. So he's off to a slower start at Double A Akron.
Well, all that big league pitching that he faced in spring training, it's a step backwards. He has to make the adjustment backwards, right?
Yeah, he's probably arm weary from hitting home runs in the desert.
There you go. He's suffering from general soreness, lieutenant achy pains. I don't know what do you got there. If we're talking about Chase DeLauder, left-handed bat, if we're talking about Kyle Manzardo, obviously a guy who plays first base, left-handed stick. I spent the last couple of days here. For whatever reason, I saw a video on TikTok, and it was a breakdown of the lineup from the 95 Indians, starting with Kenny Lofton, Omar Vizquel, Carlos Baerga, all the way down through the lineup. And you're rattling off these names and these figures, guys that, coins that you covered so closely, and that all of us who grew up as fans sort of, idolized and idealized Manny Ramirez, Jim Thome, Eddie Murray. And then you get down towards the bottom of the lineup. Obviously, Sandy Alomar's in there. But the name that I got stuck on in watching this video I sort of went down a Google and Statcast rabbit hole. Not Statcast, because he was done playing before Statcast, but it was Baseball Reference. I was looking up his page on Baseball Reference. Paul Sorrento, the guy from that lineup who sort of gets overlooked, mostly because he's playing alongside 8 other potential Hall of Famers. Just what did you think of Paul? Sorrento was here from 92 through 95. I think he moved on. He spent 4 seasons here. Yeah, he went to Seattle after the 95 season. But you know, this is a guy who in his, what, four seasons with Cleveland had a 113 OPS plus in, you know, a 797 OPS, slugged 511 for this club in 1995. And, you know, that was, you know, when you've got those hitters around you, it you're going to see a lot more fastballs. You're going to see a lot more pitches to hit. And Paul Sereno certainly did that. What did you think of Sereno in the years that he spent here in Cleveland?
Oh, I love Sereno, Joe. I remember the team, they were in Yuma, Arizona, in late in spring training. We're sitting there watching the Indians play the Padres. That was their home, Yuma, Arizona, their spring training home then. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there watching them, and John Hart comes over and tells us that he's just made a deal with the Twins to get Paul Sereno. And we're sitting there, who's Paul Sereno, you know? So we didn't make too big a deal out of it, you know? You obviously, it's a story, so you write it. But, you know, it was kind of one of those under-the-radar moves. But it turned out to be one of the best moves Hart made. And he was really, really good at those moves. You know, the moves you didn't expect, that you didn't think would produce much. And Sereno, you know, at the bottom of that lineup, a left-handed hitter. He hit for power. I remember in 1995, they had a great comeback against Toronto and David Cone. It was mid-season, or just when that momentum of that team was picking up. He hit a big home run. They came back from an 8-0 deficit, and that really kind of set the tone for that season. That was the game, you know, when you look back at, people always remember that game, and he was right in the middle of it. And also, he was in the Albert Bell cork bat incident when when they switched Albert's bat out of the umpire's room. They left a Paul Sereno bat in its place, because every bat Albert had was corked. They couldn't put another Albert Bell model in there. And I asked Sereno the next day, you know, how'd your bat end up in the umpire's room? And he did a great imitation of Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. He goes, I know nothing.
That's great. Yeah, just from a numbers perspective, just for him to, what, he totaled in 4 years with Cleveland, he totaled 75 home runs, 266 RBIs in 487 games, mostly played third base or DH when he was here and had that opportunity, and just really sort of gets overlooked, I think, in our memories and our fascination with that 95 club. But you know, he was sort of a necessary component. You couldn't have Eddie Murray playing first base at that point in his career all that often. So somebody had to be out there in the field while Murray was the DH, and Sereno was that guy.
Yeah, he was, you know, really a solid first baseman, you know, good defensively. But I always remember his power, Joe, especially down at the bottom of that lineup, along with Sandy Alomar and Tomey and Ramirez. You know, that was the bottom part of that lineup. And they were really, really dangerous. The pitcher never got a break against that lineup.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Nowadays, after playing in Seattle and Tampa Bay, he retired after the 1999 season. He moved on to be a special assistant and a coach in the Angels organization. I think now he was their hitting coordinator for a while, and I think most recently he's got some role in the front office there with Anaheim. So he's out there still in baseball, still doing well. And just I don't know, I for whatever reason that video stuck with me, as you know, all these other Hall of Fame caliber players in that lineup. And then there's Paul Sereno down there at the bottom of the lineup, and you know, killing it with a 5.11 slugging percentage in 1995, and yet he was the number eight hitter in that batting order. Still kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, just you know, good guy. I think he's from New England, somewhere in New England. You know, played high school football, had the New England accent, the Boston accent. He was a fun guy to cover.
All right, Hoynsie. the Guardians open series again tonight against the Astros at Minute Maid Park. You'll be there to provide all the coverage. And we will check back in with you again tomorrow and get a wrap-up of Game 1 here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.